So the thing is, one of the biggest myths that I always have to bust through is that your life doesn't have to be chaotic in order for you to feel stress.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement. How they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Hi, it's Anne Nelson. Welcome to the show. I'm your host today. This is part two of the two-part series, Understand Your Brain. Arnie Wilson, a brain performance and stress mastery coach, talks about the stresses that we face in our lives and finishes up with some handy brain hacks that we can all employ in our daily lives. So although we may not think we're stressed, we can show signs of stress if we transition to retirement too swiftly.
Yeah, for sure. So in some of my speeches that I do on retirement, I sort of put up the whole behind me is, you know, all the different fundamental stresses and, you know, rate them all, et cetera. And I had this one woman in an audience about 4 years ago come up to me sort of at a halfway mark and said, you know what, I'm not stressed. And I've never lived a stressed life, you know, and yet I'm still not sleeping. And I was just like, well, hello. So the thing is, one of the biggest myths that I always have to bust through is that your life doesn't have to be chaotic in order for you to feel stress. So stressors come in many fields because you can have, I think I've mentioned the psychological stressors, which, you know, which are your thought patterns or other people's behaviors. But then you've also got your environmental stressors, such as living in extreme temperatures, which goes outside the brain's natural need to be in a 20 to 21 degree environment. Anything outside that and the brain becomes sluggish on both extremes, which, you know, goes to say in the workforce that you should have your 20 degrees kind of thereabouts. Or if you are impacted by sleep. So if you're on nutritional overload of sugar substances, for instance, so the brain doesn't know how to process the sugar. And so it starts to try to change it into the glucose, and then it tries to use that glucose store as much as it can, and it takes away the glucose from the brain, and all hell breaks loose. And so you get to 10 o'clock at night and you're not tired because you've got all this glucose that needs to be burnt off. It needs to have somewhere else to go. And so we tend to then start impacting our sleep cycles. And this lady, I said to her, okay, well, tell me about your sleep. She goes, oh, I can easily get to sleep, but I don't go to sleep until about 1 o'clock in the morning. And then when I go to sleep, I mean, I'm out like a light. At 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm out like a light. But then I wake up at 4 and that's it. Like, I'm wide awake. And I've done that for 7 years. And the thing is that your brain, although it doesn't rest when you sleep, the happiness chemicals that are required for you to lead a happy life, a joyous, a contemplative life, and to have functional control are actually regenerated in phase three of your sleep. Mm-hmm. And so for her, until she was able to get her sleep patterns right, she was always going to be, I'm not stressed, but I'm a bit of an agitated person. I'm agitated and sometimes I have brain fog. And I seem to be losing memories, you know, a little bit of memory loss and all the rest of it. And I was just like, the first thing you need to do is get your sleep under pattern, because sleep in itself is a stressor. Mm. And so, yeah, you can say that you haven't lived a chaotic life, but potentially maybe your diet is the stressor in your life. Potentially maybe loneliness might be the stressor in your life. Because, of course, that shunts other neural chemicals out of whack. So there's so many other reasons as we move into retirement that suddenly we can feel that stress. Because friends are inviting us around for tea and cake or, you know.
And personality, does that have anything to do with it as well?
Ha. Well, that depends. That depends on which part of the question you're asking me, because, of course, you've got your personality changes as you age. That's one question. And then there's the second one, which is, if my personality is a certain personality type, am I more prone to suffer when I get into retirement? So I think what I'll do is I'll talk about the first one, which is the personality changes. Is that okay?
Yep. Cool. Yep, sure.
So let me just think on the science behind where I can start on this one, because we all know that the first 2 years of our life, very fundamentally, you know, important for us to build trust and love and safety and belonging, et cetera. And then, you know, as we get to a certain age, by the age of 37, neuroscientists have shown that our personality set point has been firmly imprinted. So by the age of 7, we have our boundaries, we have our safety nets, we understand the basic beliefs of our life, i.e. our parents believe in Christianity, so I believe in Christianity. That's all by the age of 7. By the time that you reach 37, your personality is rock hard. That's because of neuroplasticity, which is the changes in your brain over your adulthood because of the way that you think, because of the way that you act, because of the priming of your hyper overachiever tendencies, or let's say you're a giver, you're a hospital worker, you're a healthcare provider, you give. It becomes part of your personality rather than, oh, I just have to do this. It's no longer about any rewards coming in your brain. It's now just intrinsically who you are by the age of 37. Now, depending on those two personalities actually does depend on where the strengthening in your brain becomes. So they've shown that in an what's called an EEG. So it's an electro, I always get the words wrong. It's like a SPECT diagram. So they put a heat imprint in your brain, and they've actually found that with a high performer who's been trained to constantly achieve, they have an enlargement in the prefrontal cortex of the brain. Whereas a health caregiver who's always been primed to do everything for everyone at their own detriment, they have an enlargement in the amygdala area, which is the center of the brain, which is our emotional center of the brain. And so because of those two things, we actually enter into a stress response entirely differently. So you'll find that some people, if something shocking happens, like a burglar bursts through the door and you have one person who's a health caregiver and you have one person who's an overachiever, a type A personality, let's say, and they're both standing there, they'll have a completely different response to that person bursting through the door. And so because of this, over time, the brain develops differently. The brain feels and perceives things differently. It perceives different environments differently. It perceives that retirement differently. It thinks differently. It has a neural set point that it can go back to at times where it gets a bit startled. And so our personality absolutely determines how we see retirement, how we move into retirement, what we want out of retirement. But there was a fascinating study that was done at the University of New South Wales back in 2011, where they took a group of aggressive subjects, specifically grumpy old men, aged between 58 and 72, and they asked them to use their least dominant hand for a period of 2 weeks in order to do mundane tasks such as brushing their teeth or combing their hair, or opening up doors, or patting their partner on the back. And what they found was absolutely remarkable. They found areas of the brain that looked dead under an EEG only 2 weeks earlier, had completely shut down, were dormant, had suddenly reignited and were sparked in excitement. You know, because they were doing something and using something that they hadn't used for many years. And so those neural connections had shut down. And so what ended up happening was that the grumpy old men now had access to areas of the brain that allowed them to pre-qualify their outbursts, meaning they were slower to react and they became nicer people out of 2 weeks. 2 weeks. And so, you know, we can change how our brain functions. We can change our personality. We can change everything about ourselves because the brain never stops growing. It never stops changing. It is fascinating if you just know some of the simplest of things.
Wow.
Yeah.
I find it absolutely fascinating and amazing what you're sharing with us in this session today. if someone has already retired and they're starting to show signs of stress, such as that sleep disruption you were talking about before, or they're getting chronic illnesses, can they revert or change their neural state, or is it too late once this occurs?
No, not at all. So although the hippocampus does slow down when we do reach a certain age, it does slow down naturally. But as I said, all we need to do is start exciting it again. So the very number one thing that I would say to anybody who is starting to feel signs of anxiousness, depression, or stress after they've retired is, number one, sort the sleep out. Right, so on my website, I actually have a free sleep, God's gift to humanity, being the sleep PDF that you can download. It's got 10 tips on how to change your sleep patterns and how to, like, drinking either warmed milk before bedtime. So if it's Malteser or, I don't know, a hot chocolate or milk and tea, that has a chemical reaction in it, and it's cow's milk. It can't be almond milk or soy milk or any of the others. It's cow's milk has this chemical reaction when you warm it up that creates an amino acid called tryptophan. And tryptophan is a precursor for melatonin and serotonin, which, you know, we need melatonin in order to sleep. Everybody knows it. Everybody keeps racing out to the health food stores and trying to find melatonin tablets, etc. But it's cheaper to just warm up milk, right? Same thing. Does exactly the same thing. So having some warmed milk just before you go to bed actually tells the brain that it's time to feel sluggish. So other things are obviously having herbal teas, which are all really relaxing teas, having a warmed bath, having a routine before bedtime, just as you would with a baby, getting rid of any technology an hour before bedtime. Reading is a really good thing, but I tell people don't read things that excite you. So don't read a fantasy exciting novel. Read something that's just really nice and easy and takes you away. You know. So first of all, yeah, get the sleep sorted. Absolutely paramount so that you can start getting your neural chemistry back to status quo. So another thing is that obviously when the hippocampus slows down and we start to stop the amygdala response, so our limbic chemicals start to deplete as well, and a lot of people will start to feel no emotion anymore or really quick to anger or, you know, just real hopelessness and helplessness. And that is just your brain doesn't understand the difference between what is real and what is not real. So you can imagine yourself way back in the day, you might have been in a remote cabin somewhere, it's dark outside, you're on your own, it's stormy, and you're watching a horror movie. Now, what is the brain going to do? The brain fills in the emotional response that it thinks that you deserve at that particular point, based on what you are perceiving, right? Which is not good for you. So when we're depressed, we shouldn't be listening to sad music. When we're anxious, we certainly shouldn't be watching horror movies or jumping out of planes, right? So we have to understand that whatever we're feeling, we need to be doing counterintuitive. So when people are stressed, they tend to sort of lock themselves away and, I really don't feel like seeing my friends. I don't feel like being around others. When actually it's counterintuitive, that's exactly what we should be doing. We should become more social in order to get the oxytocin flowing again. We need to fake laugh, fake smile. We need to start pumping those chemicals back into our system again, any which way that we possibly can. And it will take, you know, it might take a couple of days, like 7 days, in order to get those chemicals back to a good standard. But it really, if you're fastidious about it and you're religious about it, you can do it. But I say my number one thing is sleep and then social. Yeah. Join clubs.
Right. And just to summarize, then there's nutrition and movement and brain exercises also help us.
Oh, 100%. So anything, a really awesome thing to remember is that any food, let's say, any food that looks like a brain when you cut it open, it's good for the brain. I don't know who found that or how long ago, but it's true. Like any pineapples or walnuts or cauliflower or anything like that that looks like a brain when you open it is fundamentally fantastic for the brain. filling your diet with omega-3s and omega-6s are essential. So that's the fatty oils that come in salmon or tuna. You know, really starting to put like Brazil nuts and like I'm a huge fan of walnuts soaked in water and as in my children's diets to spark that whole nutritional value in the brain and getting away from the toxicities. So obviously away from processed foods, away from sugars, away from alcohol, away from, well, there's a whole nother thing about caffeine. Caffeine can be good and caffeine can be bad depending on the makeup of your brain. But then, of course, so movement, getting out there and actually just, it's not about aerobic activity. It's about ensuring that your blood flow stays so that the fresh oxygen actually gets to the brain when it needs to. And then the third thing, the brain exercises. So one of the most fundamental things that we should all be doing, and we do it naturally every day, is what's called hemi-syncing or brain gym. So brain gym has hit the headlines about, I think it was about 27 years ago, where brain gym was all over the news, yeah? And now they've got it in schools and they've got it in retirement villages and all sorts of things, which is fundamentally, it is you have a left and a right hemisphere of the brain and they don't often work together. And so as we age, we tend to become lopsided in one or the other. And so what we want to do is as we age, we actually want both hemispheres to reignite and start helping each other out more. And so it's basically this part of the brain is responsible for this hand, and this side of the brain is responsible for this hand. The moment that you cross your midline, the opposite side of the brain kicks in. So I just tell people, take up activities. If you're going to do any kind of, let's say, exercise or sport or anything like that, take up activities where both sides of the brain are required, such as ballroom dancing because you're doing this with your partner, or golf where you are swinging across your midline, or tennis or squash. So walking isn't, because it's linear, it's not really a brain gym. That's an aerobic activity. So anything like crossing your legs, crossing your arms, if you're going to scratch your ear, do it with the opposite arm. So every time you do that, you train your brain to work together. It's fundamental, yeah, and it'll elongate your mental acuity. Simple stuff.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I hadn't heard of that before, so it's amazing. We learn something every day. We truly do. So what is your website and what little helps do you have there for anyone that chooses to visit?
Yeah, sure. So my website is obviously www.arniewilson. My name is spelled A-N-I Wilson, wilson.com.au, because I spend most of my time actually still in Australia. And then from there, you can select the resources section. And under resources, I've got both paid resources and free resources and tools and a whole heap of other things. So there's loads of downloads there. There's loads of tips and tricks. But you know what? I always sort of open myself to, if you have any questions, just get onto the website, go onto the contacts page and just ask me the question. Because I'm constantly, my whole premise of life is to ensure that we go back to the basics and everybody understands that they actually have the power within them. And it's free. And so if you want to know anything, if you have a fundamental question about anything, just send me that question and I will answer within 24 hours. You know, you could pay a lot of money to go and see somebody and they might put you on drugs. And it actually may be that you don't need drugs. You know, it may just be that you just need to train your brain in order to kickstart that area of the brain again. So, yeah, so let's just create a wave and get some more knowledge out there. Let's be nice to each other again.
Well, thanks very much, Arnie Wilson, for joining us today and sharing your brain performance with us and the brain gym tips at the end. I really, really, really enjoyed that. Thanks very much, Arnie.
You're so welcome, and thank you so much for inviting me on, and love what you're doing.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.